Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Leveler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Peter Abate. You've heard him here before. Now as a former assemblyman joining us today and, still involved in the game and political work in general. And Peter, I appreciate you coming all the way out from Brooklyn to speak to us. I am sure we're going to have a very interesting conversation today.
It's my pleasure to be here once again.
Something that we're going to do more frequently, once a month, we're going to have you on. And we're going to be talking to you exclusively, trying to gain an understanding of your experience and your time in the assembly. You're very prolific up in Albany. To say that you did hundreds of bills would be a disservice, more like thousands, and had a hand in, if not authoring and carrying, major labor union bills. You have certainly had your fingerprints on all of that stuff and going on some 30-some-odd years, correct?
For 30-something years. Actually, the last 20 of those years was chairman of the Civil Service Government Employees Committee. And something that I was always committed to is the working men and women and families of the state. And there's no better place to start with a family is when you talk about labor issues and what people care about, their wages, their safety, their community. And groups like yourself, I know, have people who not only work in the community but live, with everyone in the community. They go, they shop in the same stores, their children go to the school. So labor expands. People think the labor movement only talks about issues pertaining to their workers on the job, but it really pertains to the entire community.
Sure, and our members and public employees in general, they're also taxpayers. They're politically engaged. They care about what's happening legislatively, one, because it affects their life, but two, because it affects their working life. Another important distinction there, when you talk about labor, and you already alluded to this, when we work on legislation for labor, it's not about just folks that are represented by a labor union. It is about working people. So when we push for job protections, better wages, certain rules in place to protect working people, it isn't exclusively for a group. It's anyone working.
Now, usually when a labor union or a labor organization goes out and works for issues, the entire community benefits. We think of not only wages. Most negotiations go on are more than just wages. Sure. For the employee. It goes for safety factors and all. People don't realize it. From the labor movement came so many safe and healthy issues in the workplace, but also around. You look at, someone goes to a restaurant or something from the unions that represented our commercial workers.
Sure.
You have safety procedures and health procedures in our restaurants, in our stores, elevator access and stairways. Well, it's coming about through the labor movement.
Sure. We like to remind people that the weekends were brought to you by unions. You didn't used to have weekends. A worker in this country 150 years ago, you worked 7 days a week. That was that. It wasn't questioned.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
The eight-hour day and all. And if you think of the labor movement, it also spurred and brought so many new jobs. You talk about the 15-minute break.
Right.
That people get on a coffee break.
Coffee break, right.
And that really brought life to what we now know as Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
That when the early stages of that came about because of labor getting that 15-minute break for people to do something. But it also added to the productivity of the worker and the mental health, which we talk about so much now.
Sure. And listen, it's not hard to find, if you're paying attention to various news sources, you can see worker productivity has skyrocketed. The amount of work a typical worker produces in a day compared to what a typical worker used to, because of advances in technology, better practices in business and government, all of these factors combined. But you also see that wages necessarily haven't kept up with that productivity. And that reminds me of something that people are kind of seeing in the news now, and it's the UAW fight, the auto workers. And they're pushing for, now again, we talked about the fact that you have a weekend because of the labor movement. They're now pushing to move towards the European model, which has been very successful over there. 4-day work week, no loss in wages. 4 8-hour days, not 4 10-hour days, no loss in wages. And it's worked very successfully across the sea. It's very interesting to me to see where that's going to go, because that's something that's going to lead that discussion. Again, when you talk about labor unions having an impact on everyone, if the auto industry moves to a 4-day work week, that is going to put pressure on all of these industries to kind of follow suit.
Sure. And there are actually, when you started out, you talked about advances in technology. Technology made that possible. And a lot of that technology to bring us maybe to a 4-day work week and more time with family to do that, that came about through innovative ideas produced by workers in the plants.
Yes.
Or workers in an office or workers on a job somewhere telling people this is how this could be done better.
Right.
So if you can make more productivity and put less hours in, I don't know why business would mind that. It'll also cut back on expenses and the environment for people traveling to and from work. So there are so many different benefits that can be derived from that. Unfortunately, most of the time, people look at it something negative. Oh, they don't want to work longer hours. They don't want to do this. The truth of the matter is, if we can do things in a shorter period of time, just as good, if not better,
right,
that makes us a better society.
Yeah, and the ask, I think, from the labor side is misrepresented sometimes. It's sharing in that productivity gain. Mm. Say, listen, we can produce things faster, so maybe I can have a little bit of my time back. Yeah. You know, the idea that you have to just wake up and work all day, come home exhausted, go to sleep, get up and do it again, you know, pick up 2 jobs, you know, a third job, this whole concept of hustle culture. What kind of life do you end up having, right? And kids these days are growing up with the idea that they won't be able to retire, that there won't be some sort of safety net when they're older. The pensions don't exist on the jobs the way they used to. It used to be very common in this country to have a job with a pension, and now it is rare to find a job with a pension.
Sure. No, that's a major problem that we do face. I know here in the state of New York, with the different tier systems in retirement and pension systems, you go around, whether it's county, city, or state workers, the workforce is down. People took a job. It might have paid a little less, but there was security with health care, pension benefits, and all. People took that job for the security of it.
Sure.
And when we're losing that, there are less people coming into the market to fill those jobs. And that hurts the working family and all, by services are cut back or not delivered.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's bought and paid for by the taxpayer, right? I don't want to go too far adrift here, but I see a lot about civil service reform. They want to kind of change the rules by which you can obtain a job to work for the public, to be an employee of the public. And the idea is, if we make these jobs easier for people to get, we'll have plenty of qualified candidates. But when it was very difficult to get this job, when there were more hoops to jump through, we had plenty of top-tier qualified candidates because the pay was maybe a little bit less, but it was competitive in the way that benefits were derived. So the idea that you would have a pension, that you would, there would be a point in time where your contribution into the pension system would cease and the employer would pick it up, and then investment gains from the pension system would fill that gap and make this all work. Changes to the way healthcare is now derived in public employee jobs. A lot of people are contributing. Some people are contributing a little bit, some people are contributing a lot. But it used to be non-contributory. You had health care for life. You knew it. You were safe. You were guaranteed. You were going to have a pension you could live on in your retirement. You gave 30 years, sometimes 20 years, sometimes 30 years, sometimes more, of your life in service to the public as an employee of the public, and you were taken care of in retirement. That was the public contract. And now the fix seems to be we're not getting candidates. They don't want to address, in the conversations I've been having, they don't want to address the inequities that have been created over time where the public employee is making less and less and less compared to cost of living increases, things like CPI adjustments, whatever else. And to make it just easier, what we're finding, and I hate to say this, is what we're finding is an influx of less and less qualified candidates. We're making it easier to get the job, but the taxpayer is getting
less
a lesser quality. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. I mean, Unfortunately, as you mentioned, whether it's the pension or health care, again, well, I'm going to go back, whether it's the county government, a city government, a town government, or the state government, they're looking, unfortunately, now some of the younger elected officials and administrators in there looking at the bottom line of money.
Right.
How much is going out each day and how much is going for health care and pension? Not looking at the overall picture that if you bring in qualified people for those positions,
right,
and, you know, the pay might be a little lower, but you want that qualified person making the decisions, whether it's in health care, to the target, you know, teaching, or someone just an engineer fixing our roads and
right.
sewer projects
mm-hmm.
and all. You want someone the best quality for our infrastructure, and I consider infrastructure from the highway all the way to healthcare and teaching. That's the basic needs
sure.
of a community.
Mm-hmm.
And if we lose those people, we will, you know, it's just a spiral down. And as I know on the state level, tier one all the way now it's in tier six.
Yeah.
Tier six is not the environment where people want to look at it and say, listen, there are two jobs there. I can work for the county, or I can go and work for some private firm. The salary, you know, I'm not going to get that great pension or health benefits anymore, and the salary's about the same. I'll go there.
Right.
And we're losing out to that.
Sure, sure. And listen, we're finding that municipalities and localities, they're losing employees to each other. There are positions, you know, Suffolk County's hiring for that, you know, school districts and towns are paying $15,000, $20,000 more with similar benefits package. And so why would you take the county position when you know for a fact, and again, this is not, I'm not even necessarily trying to single out Suffolk County. Mm-hmm. The state has the issue, and this is coast to coast. This is going on everywhere where there isn't this competitive with the private sector or even within government. There isn't this competitive kind of structure.
Sure. Well, you talk, you know, yeah, I know you wanted to, you know, not talk specifically about Suffolk County, but it happens all the time. New York City itself loses so many employees, whether it's out here to Suffolk, whether it's to Nassau, whether it's
sure.
to Westchester, or right over the border, whether it's to Connecticut or New Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, people work in New York, they get the training for the job, and then they see a brighter opportunity and leave. And we lose the benefit of that person being trained and paid for by taxpayers'
right.
money
yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's, you know, so it works out as if government is like a vocational school in which they pay you to attend, right? And then
right,
so you
which
get
is
the training.
The wrong track.
And then, of course.
Yeah,
and then, you know, then the next worry, again, from my perspective, and it should be the perspective of government also, is the destabilization you get from deinstitutionalization, where you have a mass of people that know how to run everything that walk out, and everybody that's left behind hasn't been trained. And so you have to reinvent how to do things, and you don't have the benefit of folks that have been on. You know, that's the whole idea of the pension system. You make the commitment to dedicate your life for 30 years into government. And each year you learn a little bit more, and you add to, you know, the improvements of the system, and you have just this intrinsic knowledge of how everything works. If we're turning people over every
we're
year, every
that.
2 years, right.
We're losing that. That was you just hit it on the head. That the more experience and the more time you put in, you are much better, not only at the job for yourself, but younger people coming in watched you and you trained younger people. Now, when you get an opportunity, someone who's been there, they might leave 5 or 10 years earlier than they would have left.
Right.
And that new person is not gaining that benefit of that person on the job with them.
Sure.
And you see that, you know. And there's also discontented sometimes when you have people on the job doing the same job right now, but getting different benefits
right.
because of the tier systems set up in the state.
Right.
You know, my goal always was to make New York State, you know, one of the best best places to work, whether it was municipal government or state government, to make sure, and we always did. We were
right.
always on the top of the list, having the best workforce in the country. No better, starting, you know, from healthcare to education.
Sure.
Down, New York was always number one and innovative in the labor movement.
I right.
mean, basically, you know, we just went through Labor Day weekend. September's a big labor month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all that innovation and all, New York is still the top state in the labor movement. And again, I look at the labor movement as working men and women and their families.
Right.
Not the organization. You know,
right.
People mm-hmm. have told me mm-hmm. for years, well, you're a big supporter of this union, or you're a big supporter of that organization. I said, no. You know, I might know the president, and sometimes I don't even know the president right. of the organization. I'm out there doing the work for the working families right. of this state.
And that's a very important distinction. You know, the labor union isn't a handful of people that function inside mm-hmm. of, you know, let's call it the corporate side of things, administrative side of things, dealing with the day-to-day business of being a union. The union is actually all of the workers performing the job that's in that group.
You couldn't make it clearer. You know, when you have a corporation, you have a board of directors who are, deciding what the workforce is doing.
Right.
A labor union or a labor organization, it's the workers right. telling the top tier what we want and what you should be doing for us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just two polar opposites, you know. Looking at that, you know, that the working men and women bring ideas, really do bring ideas to the leadership of that union, which then tries to go back to the municipality or the government in charge or just an agency and say, listen, people have come to me in this profession and said, you know, we're doing it this way. Can we look at it in a different way? It might be a little more beneficial. Not only for the locality, but for also for the individuals who live in that locality.
Right. And I want to just circle back a little bit. Yeah. We had a bunch to digest there, but we were talking about some of the challenges that governments face, whether it's, you know, on the state level, local level, and coast to coast. Two things to bring to mind, you know, as we talk about all these other issues. Additionally, it is the amount of staff that's available. So if you are asking less people to do the same amount of work as more people, that affects the morale. You're always behind the gun. You know, every day you're coming into work and you're just going to shovel into a pile. You're never going to get this. There's no light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. So that's an ongoing issue. Having, you know, the term that's been used is right-sizing government. Mm-hmm. And right-sizing government doesn't mean reducing the numbers down to where government doesn't work anymore. It means having adequate staffing so that people can actually, you know, take a day off to see their kids, you know, recital, have an actual vacation, and the function of government goes on. It's important to have enough people, and especially, I've always complained about this, especially there are certain functions in government that actually generate money. It costs
quite a few.
It costs less to employ these folks, the men and women. It costs less to employ them than they bring in to the government to kind of fund all of what government does. And then getting into like this equality issue, you know, we talk about and you'll see, you know, and I've probably heard quite a bit the talk about, you know, the pay disparity between men and women. But inside of civil service, the pay disparity, you know, you want equal pay for equal effort, right? And so it's not necessarily a gender thing inside of civil service jobs. It's a question of when you were hired.
That's
because if you were hired at a particular date, you get less benefits, you get, you know.
Yeah, no, like you say, the inequality is not a gender thing anymore. It really is when you start at work with the tier system. You know, you have people in tier one and tier two are probably almost everyone is either retired or not working anymore. So you're talking about tiers four, five, and six. So as I said a little earlier, you have people working next to each other doing the same job, right, getting different pay, different benefits,
right,
paying more for their health care and all.
Mm-hmm.
With that, you get less people applying for the job, and then you get, like you said, a smaller workforce, which means you're putting a stress on. If you had eight people doing a function and you're down to five,
right,
you know, the work is just not going to be as good anymore.
Right.
It's just, you know, whether, you know, if you want to keep that amount, that quota going of getting so many things done, and you got five instead of eight workers, you know,
you're not going to do that.
And you know, you're not saving that much money in the long run because right. it's costing you more. And
yeah.
you mentioned that there are some professions out there that really, really bring money into the state.
Yes.
If you just look out in Suffolk County in the summer months, you know, with the tourism that comes
Absolutely.
Out here.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the beaches that are maintained and the roads that have the people come on and all of that. The police protection that people feel safe
sure.
to rent a house for
yep.
the summer
mm-hmm.
brings loads of money, tax dollars, into the county in Suffolk.
Mm-hmm. No, these are all, I think, very valid points. And in a way, by the way, my guest this morning, Peter Obate, former assemblyman, still very much politically active, 36 years on the job, and just a tremendous force in Albany, and always great to speak with you. But, you know, in a sense, we're kind of, you know, it's preaching to the choir. Like, I know you understand these issues. I know I understand these issues. We want to educate the world on some of these things that are going on. But it is frustrating. It's hard, you know, for someone like me, it's hard not to talk about these things. I see them everywhere, every day, all over the place. And I want better for people. I want better for working people. And I want better for taxpayers. And I find that there is a little bit, when we talk about especially the understaffing situation and government being less efficient because they're understaffed, that has a trickle-down effect. It then erodes faith in the public worker. And then you say, why am I paying all these taxes? Mm-hmm. And I can't get this service done. I need a permit for my house, and it's going to take me 6 months. I need, you know, to achieve this.
Very frustrating.
Right.
And that's why you say the state, actually, or the county, the locality, loses money. Mm-hmm. By, you know, not hiring a good and strong workforce and keeping the numbers up.
Right.
I think at last report, we're probably at some 20,000 workers in the state workforce, if not higher now,
right,
down from what we should be.
Right.
And you're right, we're trying to make efforts to get people to come in. But, you know, if they don't see it as a job that, you know, first of all, you say if it's understaffed, you're going to work harder.
Right.
And they don't want to do that. They don't want to feel that. If you're not getting the same pay as someone else doing the same job.
Right.
And you're not getting the benefits that would air that you see,
mm-hmm,
you know, and how many people follow in their parents' footsteps for jobs, you know, and saw that and say, you know, it's not what it used to be,
yeah,
anymore. So
right.
Why am I doing that?
It's not a good deal.
We have the opportunity to have the best workforce. I mean, our universities and colleges are producing some of the best, mm-hmm, people anywhere in the country. Keep them home and convince them to work for government,
right,
work for municipalities.
Right.
And if you do that and they work in their community, you see it. You see a day and like you said, you get frustrated. So do I when you talk to people who don't understand, I work for a bank and I don't get all those benefits.
Right.
Well, why are you complaining that you're not getting them? You should be getting them.
Don't
look down at your neighbor for getting them. Ask yourself, why are you not getting them?
Right.
And I'm not saying exorbitant things.
You
know, I mean, management will come up with great packages for themselves. People have to realize when, you know, as I said, 30-something years, 36 years in the assembly and all, most people, they're rich, they get money, they make sense. Most people, especially on the county levels and the local, mm-hmm, level, do, mm-hmm, not make a lot of money in the job they're performing. And they're doing it. A big majority of them are doing it because they care.
Right.
And basically how I was brought up, it's a public service.
Right.
A public service. So all those public employees out there are doing a great service for the entire community.
Yeah. I speak of the altruism. I know firsthand the altruism in the AME membership. You know, they could pick other ways to be, the things that they could do, but the people that end up being attracted to this job and taking this job, there's a core personality trait in them to look to do for other people, to help other people out, to be engaged in part of their community. And even if it's just a small function that isn't so, you know, popularized and talked about and whatever else, they get a sense of pride out of their work that they're maybe not seeing in their paycheck, but that sense of pride that they get out of their work knowing that they're
helping.
That's
why they're there.
Yes.
That's why a big majority of them are there. They care about their community. And as I said earlier, again, people, they do perform their job because they live in the community. Their family, their children go to the same schools. They shop in the same stores. They'll go to the same churches, synagogues, and mosques.
Right.
You go.
Mm-hmm.
They're an integral part of the community. So whatever they do on the job, not only for themselves, it does for the entire community.
Right. No, it's very true. So I want to switch gears for a couple of minutes. We've got a little time left. And just a little history on what we were talking about. So, you know, AME, obviously very concerned about politics and what's happening on Albany and locally and whatever else. And we partnered up with Schneps Media and kind of put together a type of forum. We go through quite a bit when we screen candidates. We talk to them. We get stuff in writing. There's question and answers, all this polling data, everything that we do when we make our selection. And we take that responsibility very seriously because we know we're going to publicly release to everyone, these are the people that we think are good. And the average person doesn't get the time to sit down and hear directly from these candidates. They get to see, you know, pre-recorded, pre-scripted, you know, kind of canned material. Doesn't feel as real, I think. And so we kind of work with Schneps Media to put together a forum.
And that's
in which,
coming up soon, isn't it?
Yeah, that's coming up on September 20th. It's free to attend. You have to register. So if you want to attend this event, we'll tell you about it. It's politicsnyevents.com. Just go on there and register, and you can come, no charge. But it allows the candidates, one, it's not a debate format. They're not going to argue back and forth with each other. I don't think that's going to be very productive, and the average person wants to see that. So they'll each get a time slot to get up there and tell us a little bit about their vision and what they see their responsibilities as being if they're elected, and take direct questions from everyday people. You know, and for the candidates, good
that's
to
very
hear.
Important.
Yeah, it's good to hear directly from everyday people because what they think maybe is important may not be what people care about, and so they can learn about that. And the everyday person gets to see what kind of character these folks have in interviewing for this job, so to speak.
It's not only important for the person to look at the candidate and see what their beliefs are and all, but it's also important for the candidate. If a lot of people show up at a forum and they ask important questions, one of them enlightens the candidate, these are the issues on what they might not know. These are the issues on my constituents' minds or my future constituents. They're out here in numbers. Numbers are the most important thing.
Right.
Elected officials, you know, if elections were held and the numbers were small, they know where their vote is.
You know?
And that's it. You know, 5,000 people come out. They know they need 2,600 to win and all.
Right.
But, you know, when the numbers start going up and it goes like instead of the 5,000, it becomes 8,000 or 10,000.
Right.
Now they have to work harder. Because now I don't know who those people are, so I better start listening to their issues. And the best way is a lot of people showing up at forums.
Mm-hmm.
They show, you know, the concerns. A lot of people are interested in this race. I better get moving a little more and talking to people. One of the things I loved was going out in the community at town hall meetings.
Right.
Or just meeting people in the street.
Right. That's where you're going to learn the things. You know, you think you know what you know, and then you learn what it is you need to know.
It's the only way, being out in the... I used to go on weekends and weekdays when I wasn't in session into supermarkets, banks, in the spring going to Home Depots and Lowe's where people were buying supplies for the summer.
Right.
Just to, you know, what are you doing here? Just want to talk to you, see what's going on every day, you know, person.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so important.
And, you know, so I referenced how we do polling data. We're concerned about a number of different factors when we look at these races. And the county executive race obviously is going to be a big race. That's going to be the administrator, the people that execute the vision of government.
Runs the county.
But one of the things that we were asking in our polling data, we were asking around, you know, a large swath of people and trying to get a sense of where people were at. People seem very engaged this year. There was a lot of calls and a lot of, you know, discussions that were had. And generally speaking, people don't want to be bothered with this stuff. They want to, you know, in years past, you know, you get a lot of people that would just hang up or, you know, that didn't want to answer the door or whatever else. People are having these discussions. They're answering all the questions. They're offering more information. There is engagement. So I would encourage anybody that's listening, you know, this is probably going to be a year where we're going to have a good turnout. There's big issues going on. I mean, remember, we discussed the sewer referendum. And
sure
we'll get into that.
More about that.
Yeah, we'll get into more of that as that keeps taking shape. But we think there's going to be a good turnout, and for a forum like this, you know, we're filling up fast, and we want to give people the opportunity to be in the room, see these folks, hear what they have to say, and answer your questions.
And from being, you know, the elected official in there for so many years, I have to tell the public when you come out to vote in large numbers, it helps you by having your political leaders on their toes.
Yeah.
That gets us moving more than anything else. When we see people vote or people care about it, we know we have to be on the top of our game. We can't slack back and all. You know, the more people, the less people come out and vote, you don't have to worry so much.
Right.
But when you see large numbers of people coming out and people engaged.
Right.
You know, one, it's not only because you feel better you want to do it for them, but there's also fear.
It's a mandate.
There is fear. You know, there's an uprising. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Elections are an uprising.
Yes.
People are telling their elected officials what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they tell them, the better it is for everyone.
Absolutely. And listen, there's plenty of dissatisfaction around the board. Yeah. I think that's probably why we're seeing such an uptick. But just to remind our listeners, it's September 20th, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Doors open at 5:15. The registration, again, it's a free event, but to register, what you must do to attend is politicsnyevents.com. That's politicsnyevents.com. And Peter, I want to thank you again. 36 years, assembly member, Peter Abate, still engaged. And again, I appreciate you carving out time to speak to us this morning.
My pleasure. Hope to be speaking to the people of the community more often.
To our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.